Hi there, I'm Juliet Nichols, the founder and director of Pineapple Audio Production, and you're listening to the Podcasting Playbook. We're really lucky to be supported by some incredible businesses at Pineapple, so I just want to take a minute here to thank House of Kalmar, a self-care brand all about empowering you to reconnect with yourself. I tried their Love Bath Oil recently, and it is beautiful. We're also working on a podcast for them, so watch this space. And Audio Boom, one of the leading podcast publishers who help you get your podcast to Apple, Spotify, and everywhere else you listen to podcasts. We use them for tons of our content distribution, so thank you very much. We are huge, huge fans. On today's episode, I'm so excited to have Georgia Frampton with us, who's a podcast and radio producer extraordinaire. She worked with Pineapple for a few years on some of our biggest projects, a few days a week, in fact, until she got quite rightly poached by the BBC. Hi, G. Do you want to tell listeners a little bit about yourself and then we'll get on to some other topics?
Sure. Thank you for having me on. So I'm Georgia. I work in podcast and radio production, of course. Currently, I'm assistant producer on the Joe Wiley Show on BBC Radio 2. Basically, that involves a lot of scripting, working with guests, a lot of time in the studio, music curation, and sort of there's a lot of music elements in that show, which is obviously great fun. And then before that, I was at Pineapple doing lots of podcasts. I was a freelance podcast producer, so I was doing a lot of editing, I was doing a lot of scripting there as well, researching and hosting remote recordings, which is something I don't do as much of now, but loads of skills that I developed at Pineapple I use every day at Radio 2.
Oh, that is so nice to hear. It's so amazing that you've gone on to do the great things that you're doing now. And having seen you come from student radio, because that's how we originally met, right? Through student radio. And seeing you develop and then come into Pineapple and do the freelance stuff and do some really big projects. Like, you know, you took on some huge responsibilities actually at quite a young age. Like you were really across Love Island and some big projects for Metro, all kinds of things, and got so stuck in before starting the BBC. Tell us a little bit more about the details of some of the projects that you worked on. I mean, tell us about your day-to-day now and tell me a little bit about also what you did at Pineapple.
Okay, so my day-to-day now varies a lot. There's always sort of scripts to do. The really interesting thing about Joe's show is that we have full control over our music. So we spend a lot of time scheduling music. Joe does a lot of that. My producer does a lot of that. But so there's a lot of sort of checking that no one else has played it, checking that everything's okay with the music, checking it's clean, fun things like that. Lots of preparing for guests and coming up with sort of features and games. I particularly love when we go to Maida Vale and do live sessions from the really famous BBC Maida Vale studios. They are beautiful and you just sort of feel the history when you're there. We have loads of live guests from sort of really new artists all the way through to really, really massive names.
Yeah. So how does that differ to your days doing Pineapple or doing podcasts more generally?
I'd say the similarity of it is how much things are different every day. The differences would be I don't do online recordings as much anymore. Occasionally we have like a Zoom recording, but thankfully now that we're out of lockdown as well, BBC are really back into doing most of their interviews live and in person. I don't get to do as much editing, which I always really love doing. Something I'd started doing quite a bit of in the podcasting world before I moved to the BBC was sort of music design and selection. And, you know, taking a podcast right from the start means that you're helping them, yeah, choose their theme music and finding guests. And whilst there is a lot of sort of discussion with guests and sort of arranging what they'll be talking about on air and things like that, I don't really tend to do the booking as much.
Yeah, you did all kinds of things at Pineapple.
And I love that. I think that's the key thing about any job I do. It's got to be really varied and lots of fun, different things I can get stuck into.
And taking it back just a little bit, student radio is a real passion of mine because it's kind of one of the places I got started and I got lots of experience and I've been still really important for me to champion people
in student radio and you've come from that. So what was the impact of student radio on you? Because that's definitely, I mean, one of the things is that we met, but were there other things that student radio helped with?
I always say that student radio, I mean, was everything, because I hadn't really considered radio and podcasting until I got into student radio. The story I always tell actually is I didn't even really mean to get into it. I think I was in my second year of uni, felt like I hadn't really got involved in enough stuff in my first year. And I was looking to actually join like a band or something. And I remember I kind of bumped into the student radio stall or something that was going on. I can't remember. And they were just really great. And I remember I cannot understand how they convinced me to do a radio show, because it is so out of character for me, but they just gave me a show like on the spot and said I could come along, and I got super involved from there. I had like a weekly show. I then ended up doing like a breakfast show for them, and I was part of the music team as deputy music or something like that. And so I was doing like the new music shows and the chart shows and things like that, and just absolutely loved it. I feel like it was where I found my little community, and they were absolutely amazing to me. A, in just sort of getting stuck in with everything. B, in sort of making my student experience and having sort of like that group of people. But then C, and probably one of the biggest things, is their alumni schemes, which were completely invaluable to me, because I remember thinking, I now know I want to go into radio and podcasting. I don't know how or, you know, where to begin. I know that I'm making some things, but, you know, who is in around me? We're all doing that. And I remember stumbling across, I think after I'd just graduated, stumbling across the Student Radio Association like alumni page, and they were doing these mentor schemes. And so I applied for the podcasting production one, and I applied for the radio production one. I knew by that point I didn't want to like present, so they put me on the radio one. But they said, oh, the woman doing the podcasting one would really love to talk to you though, if you want some advice. So obviously I took them up on that, and then we just got chatting, and basically I made my own mentor scheme and refused to leave you alone and just kept harassing you is how I always think of it. And then I got two mentors when they said I could only have one, so and
it worked out.
It did work. And you started all my podcasting stuff, really. You were the one that got me into loads of my podcasting work and gave me so much advice and help. And then my radio mentor, Nels Hilton, was got me into the BBC, really, and was the first person to introduce me to some of the people at the BBC. So I literally owe my entire career to the Student Radio Association, because if I hadn't have met you guys through that, none of that would have happened. So I owe you guys a lot.
Oh, it's a cool fact of the audio industries in general that people do want to help each other out. It's a nice like heritage thing, and I'm sure you're exactly the same. Now you're in the position you're in, it's like pass it on, pass it on, pass it on. And that's the vibe of the audio industry, and it's lovely.
I think that's the nice thing about the fact that we're all just audio nerds at the end of the day. And so everyone wants to, you know, if a freelancer at the BBC who's sort of like covering the show that sits next to me sort of thing, if they're chatting about various things and going, oh, I don't know how to do that, I'd like to learn at some point, I'm instantly like, I'll show you, because I just want to talk about radio and audio and be nerdy. And so it's great to like someone will listen to me talk about that. So I think we all just love to chat, don't we?
That is the thing. It's like you find your tribe of people who also love audio and run with it. It's great. But if for you, it sounds like you didn't, I mean, it surprises me in a way that you didn't always have that love, because from my understanding, this is like a family business. Your dad also works in audio. So it surprises me that it came kind of later for you, and that it kind of came by chance, the student radio thing got you into it. So you didn't have that, they didn't inherit that love from your dad?
Yeah. So I think the funny thing is I always wanted to work in music. When I was really little, I was adamant I was going to write songs. If you've heard any of the songs that I wrote when I was 14, you will understand why I am not writing songs. I used to love music. I was raised in a really musical household. My dad and all my uncles work in music. All of my aunties are super creative and have had really creative jobs. My mum is very creative, and does all sorts of different amazing things. So I think I always knew I wanted to do something creative, and that it was, that was really great that they installed in me sort of do a job that you really love, have a job that's your passion. It was always my joke that my partner always says to me, like, oh, you need a hobby because you accidentally turned your hobby into your career, and now all you do
is
work.
Isn't that the dream? Isn't that the dream, though?
It is, really, yeah. But yeah, so growing up, I wanted to be in music, and then was doing radio. And yes, of course, there's a massive music element of that, but sort of fell in love with the sort of speech and the production, the interviews and things like that, and have wound up on a music radio show, which is kind of the best of both worlds. But yeah, I didn't really even think of radio as a career. I suppose none of my family, because they were all like behind the scenes music. My dad's a sound engineer and sort of mixer, masterer, and my uncle's a songwriter and producer, and so they never did the radio side. You know, if they'd been like a plugger or I don't know, something, or they'd been the artist, I think maybe I'd have seen that side of it more, but I'd never seen that. And every now and again I come across someone whose name rings a bell and I go, oh, did you work with someone that I think my dad worked with? Really weird. Yeah, I like the fact that we have adjacent jobs and we can sit around a dinner table still when I go home and like talk about Pro Tools plugins and chat about audio nerdy stuff and microphones and things, but we don't do the same job. So it's not like there's footsteps to walk in or like shoes to fill or anything like that, which I think is the right balance. It's nice.
Welcome to The Quality of Life, the new wellness podcast for Saudi, the GCC, and the world.
Take that risk, try something new, and don't be afraid to fail.
Hosted by me, Raham Harrig, the first Saudi woman to climb Everest and the Seven Summits. I'll be speaking to the biggest names in the GCC and across the world.
You're an absolute badass for being an astronaut and a mom of four.
You can listen in both Arabic and English every Friday morning after Jumat prayer.
That is very cool. And as someone who comes from a family of people who work in the finance world, I am very envious that you can sit around the kitchen table and have those conversations, because I talk about things that people do not understand in my family. But I mean, it's also lovely that you forge your own path, because you very much have done that, clearly taken a passion from your family and your surroundings, but you've built your own thing.
Yeah, I think they created the passion of like, and sort of just the realization that that is a massive behind the scenes world of the entertainment industry that you don't see. And I think from a young age, I was therefore able to, anything I watched, anything I listened to, anything I saw entertainment wise, I was always thinking about those people like behind the scenes. And I mean, obviously it's got a lot worse since I've worked in radio, and now I cannot watch a TV show without thinking. I mean, you know, I watch like a clip or something and go, wow, the producers must have worked, like that must have taken a long time to make that montage. You know, like if there's like anything in like a award show and you watch like the montage of like the bet, like, you know, Lifetime Achievement Award or something, and you see the montages and everyone else is like, oh, it's so sweet, look at his reaction. And I'm sitting there going, that montage must have been an absolute nightmare to make.
Yeah. It's one of those things, isn't it? Once you open that door, it's hard to come back, isn't it? Once you've seen and understood how much work does go into those kinds of things. Let's quickly talk about one project then. The Love Island podcast was a big one for us, and you did tons of different things as part of that project. Just tell us a little bit about what you did.
So I can't remember the official title we came up with. I think studio producer. But so basically that was by far the biggest project I'd worked on to that point. We had a whole group of sort of content producers, and we had a bunch of audio engineers, and we had a podcast, a guest booker. And obviously you were overseeing the whole thing, but also in a different country for a lot of it. So I think we just needed someone that was able to sort of be on the ground and oversee. I think that was quite a massive learning curve for me, with just things like trusting myself with. I remember suddenly we were realizing people didn't have like microphones or something, or someone had to do, we had to last minute do something remotely and the guest didn't have a microphone. And people were saying to me, oh, can we send them a microphone? And I was sort of looking over my shoulder being like, oh, am I signing that? Or is that my job? Is that, am I signing that off? Am I allowed to sign that off? I just remember messaging you like later being like, so I just put a bunch of microphones on Pineapple accounts. Is that okay? Like, and you just being like, yes, I trust you. Like, you just do what needs to be done to make this good. And that was it was a really great feeling. It took a while for me to get used to be like, okay, this is, I have to trust myself that I know what I'm doing. I'm not like wasting money. I'm not wasting time. I'm just getting on with stuff and doing what needs to be done. And it was amazing. Great fun. It went to number one in the podcast charts. Being in the studio, we did a mixture of sort of in-person and remote recordings, both of which came with their benefits and their challenges. And we adapted along the way as we sort of learned what worked best for us and what worked best for our presenters. And it was amazing. We're making sort of daily show like that you had to turn around fast. It was actually probably the closest thing before I worked in radio to that we did podcasting wise. Obviously at the same time I was freelancing in radio already, but that sort of thing of, okay, you have to make the show and you have to turn it around like immediately, and then you have to send it off and leave people to edit things overnight. I'd always been very much like, either I was doing everything editing wise and I was the engineer, or I was doing everything start to finish and I was sort of helping prep and book guests and then I was recording and then I was editing. It was a really weird experience for me to hand something off overnight and go to bed and wake up and trust that it would be done and to the way that I wanted it done. Obviously we had amazing engineers, so I was able to trust them with that, and I'd sort of have a conversation with them before I left the studio normally about what needed to stay, what needed to go, what production sort of elements needed to happen. But it was a really good experience for me to learn to like trust other people, and not, you don't have to do everything yourself and you can rely on teammates and stuff. It's sort of one of the first big times that I had like a team around me that we could all like work together.
And it was an amazing team, a real mix of like huge amounts of responsibility, time constraints, and like you say, delegating and really having to work together. Because yeah, a lot of the stuff that we do at Pineapple, there is that full, you do the full thing and generally you're involved in the full thing, so you can see it all come together. And like you say, with the speed and the turnaround times, that everyone needed to have their job to survive, literally to survive that couple of months. So yeah, but it was amazing. And you were such a trusted pair of hands. So I will always be grateful for all of the things that you did for Pineapple. But particularly that, it was wonderful. And like you say, lots of challenges, lots of lessons, lots of things that we learn out of it. And what a brilliant experience. So if you had to pick one thing, one experience, I mean, you've done so many things. And I think for someone at your age, and actually even when I met you, you were such a wise audio person. Like, there's so many people in their early 20s need to learn a lot, and you learn a lot for sure, but you've always a very trusted pair of hands, which is lovely. If you had to pick one lesson or one challenge you've overcome, something that you've learned so far in your career that you would pass on to somebody in your shoes those couple of years ago, what do you think that would be?
I think maybe I'd say, I think it would probably be about like saying yes and saying no to things. The advice I was given by everybody, which is absolutely great advice, is say yes to everything. And I would completely agree with that. I think there was a point where I nearly said no to Love Island because I remember saying to you like, are you sure that I can do that? I'm very young and early. Like, and I remember you having to be like, no, you're ready.
You can definitely do it. Yeah.
And I just remember sitting with you being like, I don't know. Like, but so there is absolutely an element of say yes to everything. You know, when I was, everything I feel like has come along, I've said yes, thinking, oh gosh, I'm not ready for this. And then it's been an incredible experience and I've learned so much. I would like to caveat though, my piece of advice is maybe you don't have to say yes to everything when you start getting really busy. Because I'd say there was a point of my freelancing, I still wanted to do radio and I still wanted to do podcasting. And I probably had a full-time job in both. And I was just like, well, I'll just do both then. And I think when you first start saying no, you feel really guilty. Like, I remember the first time I had to say no to a BBC shift and they were like, oh, can you do this show? And I physically couldn't. I remember feeling guilty about that. But then even worse was when like, I was free, but I had not had a day off in weeks. And I'd kept that aside to do something really chill and relaxing and sort of look after myself. And I remember the first time I said no, just because I needed a break. And I felt really guilty about that. And you convince yourself that they're not going to need you anymore and they'll find someone else and then that will play the new person. And whilst the industry is very supportive and lovely, as we were talking about earlier, with everyone sort of helping each other, there is also that really stressful situation in like a freelance industry where you think, if I don't do it, someone else will, and then they will become what they'll take over, sort of thing. And that is quite a stressful feeling as well, that I think isn't really worth spending much time thinking about, because it doesn't happen. There's loads of work. Well, I suppose occasionally it does happen, but that's okay. Like, you have to be able to look after yourself as well. And there comes a point where I think you can push on every door, absolutely push on every door. You don't have to walk through every single one. You can leave some open and you can come back to them. But yeah, I'd just say you don't necessarily, don't feel guilty if you can't say yes to everything, I think would be my advice.
That's really great advice, because you're absolutely right. The tendency is to say yes, get the experience and, you know, but you can't run yourself into the ground to do that. And if there's no energy left, then it's not worth it.
Yeah, and you won't do the job as well. And I'd rather do a job well and sort of leave a good impression than sort of do a job so that I'm in the room, but then not do it as well. I think it's important to know yourself. And same with like taking risks, though. It's like, absolutely push on those doors and take risks. And I had an opportunity at one point where I was sort of work before I was working as much as I ended up working with you. I was sort of in a podcast job that was sort of adjacent to what I wanted. It wasn't really the sort of thing I wanted to do. And I remember choosing to go freelance so that I could do more with you and do more BBC Radio, which were the two things I was super passionate about. And that was really scary to say yes to those things. And I absolutely was right to say yes to those things. And you should take the leap and you should say yes to what you want to say yes to. But I just think it's remembering that it's okay if you can't say yes to everything. It's a great situation to not be able to say yes to everything, because it means there's lots of work, but you don't feel like you have to do it all, because it's not sustainable.
No, like you say, and just trusting that there will be more things and the opportunities will arise, and you can invest time in yourself as well as investing time in getting out there and being part of the industry. It's important. That's great advice. Thanks, Georgia.
And every freelancer always says about the fact that there's like busy periods, which are okay to be. It's okay to be crazy busy as long as that's not like your full time position. And then it's okay to have quiet moments. I don't know any freelancers that haven't said to me like, oh, it's really stressful when everything suddenly gets quiet. You convince yourself that it's never coming back. That's not true. There's, you know, ebbs and flows and things come and go, and that's okay. And you should, when it is quiet, enjoy it. Go on holiday, like take the moment, because then when it gets crazy again, you'll be wishing you had.
You're absolutely right. And sometimes it just takes a little bit of time being in the freelance world to know the next time a quiet period comes around to make the most of it, something will turn up. Thanks, G. That's really, really lovely advice. Thank you so much, Georgia, for being our guest on the Podcasting Playbook. And thank you for tuning in and getting to know a little bit more about the work that we do at Pineapple. Don't forget to follow and review for more podcast episodes coming your way soon. Bye for now.